Welcome to the Mindfulness Podcast. This is David Black. My guest today is Dr. Mariana Klatt. She is Professor of Family Medicine and the Director of the Center for Integrative Medicine at The Ohio State University. Her current research focuses on developing cost-effective programs in healthcare settings to reduce the burden of stress-related illnesses. Specifically, her program is focused on mindfulness-based approaches. And she has shown that this intervention might save as much as $4,000 on average in healthcare expenditures and costs for adults. And we can talk more about that. Welcome, Dr. Klatt. Our last personal engagement was when you kindly invited me to the Ohio State University in 2015 to give a talk. And we also had a meditation retreat. I do remember that. I don't know if you remember that. We had a meditation retreat. And I saw a lot of your wonderful sites on the tour. Your healthcare facilities really had this wellness feel to them based on their architectural design, and your group was building up all of these wellness services. So it's great to have you today.
It's great to connect with you again.
Yeah. So you're the director of the Center for Integrative Medicine. So do you want to talk about how this center fits within this large medical center that you have, and what are the objectives of this center?
Absolutely. So actually, we changed the name to the Center for Integrative Health. And the reason behind that really was to get to the idea that health is possible for even people that are not physically healthy, so that well-being is available for all, and that there are some things other than traditional medicine in the Western world that we can add that can help us be well, even if we're not physically healthy. And so that was really, that was like really important to me that we changed the name. And so the dean and everybody was very much behind that. And second of all, then we became a separate center within the Department of Family and Community Medicine to really work with different departments and to try to leverage the different gifts of different departments. So a lot of my research partners are from health and rehab sciences, from physical therapy, one from nursing. So anyway, I love being the center, and I love our new name because I think it reflects the reality of what we want to deliver.
And in this coordination of your different programs and institutes, is this a service oriented towards patients? Is it accessible to all of those in the university and community? What's the target group, and what services do they receive?
The target group is the community, which includes all faculty and staff. So Ohio State employs a lot of people. And so a lot of our patients are faculty and staff, and yet we serve the larger community. So I'd say it's both and. We have acupuncture, we have osteopathic manipulation, we have functional medicine, we have nutrition, intuitive eating, we have a psychologist on board, we have a chiropractor, we have 12 massage therapists, 3 physicians, a nurse practitioner. It's booming. People want this stuff. And then community classes, we have mindfulness, we have yoga, we have Tai Chi, we have Qigong, we have some classes on loneliness. So kind of across the board, but I'm excited about the whole initiative. And we're trying to train the future healthcare professionals in these modalities, to expose them to them so that they know what's available.
Ever since the inception of the program of mindfulness-based stress reduction, everyone has talked about making good referral systems. Is there a referral type system, like going back to the pain clinics and the origination of MBSR, that was one of the key features of making it work. Like, you needed the physician buy-in and you needed people to be making referrals. Is there a referral system? Or
there
I'm
is.
Assuming at some point we're going to finally integrate so much and that referral systems aren't as important. But given the common disjuncture between integrative health programs and what we might call quote unquote mainstream medicine, is still relying on referrals. So how does your group make it work?
We are 500 referrals behind. So if that tells you anything about buy-in, I think it says something good. The part that's not good on that is that we don't have enough providers to provide the services. So that's why we want to grow our own. We want to provide the training for medical students, nurses, occupational therapists, everything at the undergraduate and graduate level, so that then when those people go on, they will be part of our system, not just having to refer.
Do you have a main referral source? So pain clinics or pain institutes within the hospital have been a primary source in the past. Cancer survivorship has been a primary. And what do you see as being primary at your institute?
Cancer. Yeah, cancer patients turn to us. Well, one thing that a change that I would like to see is I think oftentimes physicians refer to us when they feel like they don't have anything else to offer. And I would like to see that referral come sooner in the health trajectory. And so that's where we're working. So we're doing a lot of education around that for the providers.
Yeah, that fits the point. As if we're going to be integrative, you don't wait until you run out of ideas in mainstream medicine.
Right.
Yeah, begin at the start and try to hold these methods together at the same time. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Okay, so there's the broad program. You're servicing both your internal staff, the broader community with these programs. And in doing so, I don't know where this historically lined up, but you created your own program, Mindfulness in Motion. When did that come about in relation to these other things at the university? And what was your vision for that one?
Well, the vision was, I'm a yoga teacher and a mindfulness meditation teacher, and I love both of those practices. The mindfulness, for me, felt too cognitive, and the yoga felt too physical. And when I say too, what I mean is that I thought that we could utilize more of the body in mindfulness, and I thought we could utilize more of the mind in yoga. So my goal and the vision was to create a pragmatic program that would unite mindfulness and yoga. I added relaxing music to it and did it within a 60-minute time frame so that busy people at work could do it. That was my goal from day one, and that was in 2004. The integrative clinic started in 2005, so it was very, I was involved in both. But the mindfulness in motion took off after we saw that the very initial study, I got a little teeny grant from Women in Medicine for $2,000, and we ended up running, actually, a randomized controlled trial. And our results were so good that I thought, I think we're onto something here. So the hospital in 2008 allowed me to do a study in the surgical intensive care unit with 32 nurses, and it was a randomized controlled trial. And on that one, we found significant differences in salivary alpha amylase from the beginning of the 8 weeks to the end of the 8 weeks. And what that told me was that since that's a marker of parasympathetic or sympathetic nervous system activation, the change in that, the nurse's response to the stress was different. Their stress was the same, but the way they were responding to the stress and processing it was so different. And that study, because there was a biomarker involved, I think that was really pivotal. And what that did was that got the health system on board. So the health system started to look at some different programming that they thought, you know, what could we use to support our employees? What could make, if you think of the quadruple aim of healthcare and, you know, making health more accessible and more affordable for all, but that fourth aim of increasing meaning and joy in work for the healthcare provider so that we could achieve the first three of the quadruple aim, so important. And people started to pay attention to that. So we ended up getting an R21 from the NIH, and on that grant and that research, we found some differences in CRP levels for people that were overweight but not obese that was achieved by the mindfulness and motion. So that was another good thing. Then the health system got on board in 2017, and they said, you know what, we're going to sponsor this, and we're going to pay people. Well, we're going to allow people to do the Mindfulness in Motion program during work so that they feel valued. And, like, I was just totally thrilled, because to have the employer sign to the employee that you are valued, you are important, and here, let me help you. Let me help you feel good so that you can come to work and be the best healthcare provider that you can be. So starting in 2017, we started to do cohorts just with physicians. And it was the physicians who said, oh, no, we need everybody in this room. We can't just be just our population of the doctor. We need to know what causes nurses stress. We need to see what causes the dietitians, the PTs, the OTs. They said, we want the janitors in this room. And so I loved it. So that kind of so we then changed our tactic and went to the managers of all those different service lines. And we got the managers involved so that they would see the benefit in their own lives, so that they would support the people on their teams to attend the programming during work.
Yeah, during the work during the work hours is great.
Oh, it was
great.
Because
it's hard for all of us in work, family, life balance, which it has been called, but everyone says it's almost impossible to do. If you can do some of that that balance at work, it gives you that time at home to watch the kids and do the bedtime routine, like I'm so involved in right now. So that's awesome. That was an offering that they can do during structured hours that they would have physically been at the office. And I think that's an important point, because I read in your work in 2021, this is an article in Explore, I'll put it in the notes, when you had nurses, physicians, chaplains, pharmacists, and allied staff involved in this program. But there were a variety of ways in which it has been delivered, and I guess modifications to it. It started with, I believe, you. That was like a first iteration, your delivery. Then you taught teachers, a teacher of teachers, and I think you called that a hybrid model from what I recall, and then moving towards more video-based and remote. And so how has that evolved? Am I accurate? And
you are accurate.
Some more specifics to that.
Yes. So at the beginning, I delivered them all, and I tried to teach other people, like other mindfulness teachers or other yoga teachers, and I invited them in to also teach. But what they found difficult to do was to keep it within the 60 minutes. Well, the 60 minutes is really important for somebody at work in many different ways. And another little sidebar there that I think is really important is we provided a meal, a wonderful meal. So we did it at breakfast, lunch, or dinner, depending on shift work, when it different times of the day, different days of the week. Oh, I lost my train of thought here. What were we talking about?
Well, you were talking about the teachers having trouble modifying the amount of time. Yeah.
So they tried to do it, but it would like go over like 90 minutes and we couldn't have that. So then I thought, got to be creative here. So I started to make two 15-minute videos. One was to deliver the science of mindfulness, and one was to deliver the practice. That way, the teachers could be doctors, nurses, OTs, PTs, dietitians. So coming from their own. That has been the biggest success of all. They did not have to be content area experts in mindfulness. What their job was to welcome the participants as they come in. So we call them facilitators. They welcome, they show the participants what the reflection is. As the participants fill out the reflection, they show a video of the science behind it. Then there's a half hour where they facilitate the discussion on the reflection question. And this is the part I love the most, because that's where ideas are transferred and just the community is built. And then the last 15 minutes of the hour is the video of the mindfulness practice. That structure has really worked. So we have trained, gosh, we just did a training last week with 6 people, but over the last, I don't know, since 2004, we've probably trained maybe 25 people, that facilitators, primarily doctors, nurses, MPH, public health is very interested in this. Yeah, so it's worked out great. I think that training program, I think we've got a good model for it. So first of all, people attend the program just as a participant. Then they attend somebody else facilitating the program, so they see how it runs. Then they do a two-day training with me and the program manager. And then they're off and running. And that model has worked out really well.
So the usability for healthcare professionals is high. They can walk into this room during allocated time, and they can receive teachings on a behavior intervention. Mm-hmm. What do you think? What do you think are the top two most useful features to be gained by healthcare professional? Because although I do hear, like, we have a center of mindfulness science also at our university, and we have a lot of buy-in, and everyone says, this has changed culturally across the last 20 years. So mm-hmm. everyone will do lip service, like the healthcare staff and physicians and nurses and endocrinologists, and everyone will say, yeah, you should go ahead and do the program. But, you know, oftentimes it will stop there with the majority of people. They won't then do it and just say, hey, you should try out this program. So if someone were to ask, like, what am I going to really gain that's unique from a program like this? What do you think the top two things, based on what you've heard?
Well, I can tell you, because I just looked at the qualitative data from the last 600 people. So I know. So the two biggest takeaways is the space that people gain between reacting to something and responding to it, realizing that there's a space there that they have power over. And I was surprised how clearly people and how many people articulated that. So that's a huge thing. The second thing was being reminded of what's most important to them, so that they hold that in front of their face, in front of their mind as they go through their day. They're much more cognizant of keeping what gives them meaning in front of them as they work with patients, as they work with clients. And I think those are the things. In terms of physical practices, they love the breathing practices because it gives them something to do. And then also the gentle yoga practices that are appropriate for the work site. I love to walk down the halls in the hospital and seeing somebody doing one of them. That is, to me, that's the biggest sign of success there is. But then COVID hit. And COVID pushed me to a place I did not want to go. It made me go virtual. Because for years, everybody's like, well, you can't scale this because you have to reserve these rooms and, you know, you provide lunch and all this stuff. So during COVID, we went fully virtual. And up to that point, I had gotten about a 25% reduction in burnout from the people qualified from the beginning of the 8 weeks to the end of the 8 weeks. When we went fully virtual and did all these by Zoom, the change in burnout was even greater. I didn't think that we could establish community on the internet, but it was possible. So I discovered something that I never would have done because I never would have gone fully virtual. So it's really not hybrid now. So, but what this has allowed us to do is now we are going to many other hospitals and providing this service. So we are really thrilled about that.
Great. And I saw the release. There's just a conference presentation, I believe. Maybe you're working on the manuscript with your group. It was this Mindfulness in Motion program, and you're focusing on a patient base. And I thought it was interesting. It's pulmonary rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. And it makes a lot of sense. You know, the breath focus is a lot of focus. Now, I'm not sure what the concept here is, but it seems that you're trying to increase self-efficacy to manage pulmonary symptoms. So now we're focused on patients and a new way of using a meditation program. And so how do you see that working?
Oh, well, this is a success story. So the person who did that program, who delivered it is a physician, and she worked in, she's a pulmonologist. She was a fellow. So she had some research time. So she came to me and she was a yoga teacher. And she came to me and she said, hey, I want to work with you. And I've got all these COVID patients. I loved Mindfulness in Motion. I want to tweak it for them. And there's a pulmonary rehab program, an 8-week program. So it's like it fits in perfect. We just add on an hour to the 8 weeks. So together, her name is Dr. Kelsey Black. She's wonderful. And we worked together. We tweaked the program. A lot of them were lung transplant patients, COPC, you know, COVID. And the patients liked it. They liked it, and their self-efficacy was increased. So now she is an attending physician here at Ohio State, and we're looking forward to continuing that. But to me, that, I don't know.
Yeah, and there was something in there. I'm usually excited about the observable features of human behavior. and so your group in this conference paper was also looking at like breathing rate. So I got super excited. I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Like, is there an important health effect of an alteration in breathing rate that would have implications for something like pre-exercise routine? This is getting into some of the weeds, but I was like, oh, this might be a different take on how to slow respiration rate. Is that important, you know,
so
prior to an exercise?
From the very beginning, from 2004 on, I take a 30-second respiration rate. I say go, and I say stop. And every participant counts their inhales only. We enter it into a Qualtrics. We do the hour together. We do the breath count again. So there's a pre and post breath count for every participant every time. So I've got data from thousands, so many people. And of course it goes down pre to post. That is not surprising to me because they're more relaxed. They're, you know, focusing on what's important in their lives, all that stuff. So that's good. But the better news from week one to week eight, it's down, the pre-breath. So what that tells me is that their normal breath has come down over the 8 weeks of practice. And, yeah, and to me, that's really getting it into the motion of their lives. And that's, I like that they can see the proof themselves.
Yeah, rest, and that's important for respiration rate and the felt sense of whatever relaxation means, but also perhaps it signals something else about nervous system activity and less stress. So yeah, that's exciting work. Well, good luck. It seems like that's still in the development of being published. And so another piece, so that's your some of your research program, and I see you're doing a bunch of other things in healthcare delivery, but we'll focus on the mindfulness stuff. And you have a leadership role, many roles in education as well at The Ohio State University, including your development of an undergraduate minor. Mm-hmm. Called Integrative Approaches to Health and Wellness. So do you want to talk about that? Here's your teaching hat.
I'm a teacher. I mean, that's what I do. And, you know, you're a mindfulness teacher. You know that it's just educating people and giving them power. So I teach a course called Mindful Resilience from the individual to the organization. And it is for future leaders, because I think we're all leaders in our lives. But that is one of the courses in the undergraduate minor, Integrative Approaches to Health and Wellness. So I developed that in 2006 and started out with 8 students. We had a blast. It was great. So I developed 5 courses to be offered as part of that, and then went to all the different departments at OSU. We have courses from 18 different departments that are part of the minor that students can choose from. So fast forward, now it's 100 students a semester. Again, it's that concept of we need to grow our own. And I think, a lot of the students that come through that minor end up going to medical school or nursing school or one of the allied graduate programs. And actually, a lot of my team that are on here as staff, who I absolutely could not operate without, they went through the minor as undergrads. So that's kind of fun.
So from the training of an undergrad all the way up to the Integrative Medicine Center, there's teaching programs, both of other teachers and of students who might be interested. And this goes all the way to a program that you call Mindful College, the Mindful College Student. Mm-hmm. And is this different? This is for freshmen, I believe. And you're trying to use it less as a therapeutic mechanism, more to develop coping strategies in these young adults. What's that class about?
So that class is a result of the class for seniors that was Mindful Resilience. And that actually is an honors course. The first year I taught that course, that must have been 7 or 8 years ago, those seniors said to me, "Oh, we needed this course when we were freshmen. Why are you waiting until we're seniors?" So I thought, oh, more work for me. Anyway, so then I took the Mindfulness in Motion and tweaked a track just for college freshmen. That class, that is now a 4-credit class. It is 8 weeks, and it's half a semester. And I used to offer it right at the beginning of freshman year. And then I learned they were still excited about starting something new. If I waited till the second half of first semester, they realized why they needed the course.
Yeah.
So
the excitement of being a college student, and then the exams hit,
and then they
have to do that for 4 years.
So I love that class too. So really, it's just a college version of Mindfulness in Motion.
Great. Well, congratulations on all your wonderful research projects and your teaching programs. So for your future work, what's one thing you're most excited about? Do you have a research project
that
you're really
excited
about?
We just got a grant starting earlier this summer from Ohio Bureau of Workers' Comp. And we are developing a respite space inside of hospitals. So we're calling it the Buckeye Pause Bundle, and they will have the mindfulness practices within this soundproof space, and the practices will be on their app, that will a mobile app that will be able to be mirrored within the pod, within this respite space. And we got we are going to put them in 4 different busy hospital units, and we are just thrilled about this. They are decorated with some beautiful nature scenery, so that in a very stressful clinical environment, typically there are not spaces for the healthcare professional to get 5 minutes. This will provide that space, and they will have the mindfulness practices within that space. So hey,
where's the setting for this? Did you say it was at the Ohio State University Medical Campus, or where's the setting?
Yes.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. In 4 different in our heart hospital, cancer hospital, our main hospital, and then on our east side of town. Yeah. So
great. Sounds exciting.
I'm very excited about that. And also, we are taking the mindfulness in motion from the healthcare professional that is a first responder within the hospital to a first responder in the community. So we have a grant for that too, to interview police and fire EMT to figure out how to best adapt the program for them. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Very exciting. let's see. Let's end with some fun personal questions. So if you could sit and enjoy a view, would you prefer beach, desert, or mountain view?
Can I pick a different one?
Sure, of course.
For me, it's Lakeview.
Lakeview, okay.
Yeah, we've got a little cottage in the woods on a lake. And for me, that view means that I'm in a space to take some time and take some visual space and take some mental space. So that's really the view that I like the best.
If you had a free day, where would you spend it? I'm kind of assuming it might be related to that one. Where would you spend it?
It's true. It would be there, but it would be reading a novel that I can't put down.
Oh, perfect. Because I was going to say, what would you be doing in that environment? So reading a novel. Well, wonderful. So let's conclude. Thank you, Dr. Klatt. I really enjoyed our conversation. Listeners can find our podcast at goamra.org by now.